Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We are talking at UMW Museums this morning, University of Mary Washington, and a good friend and friend of the show, Scott Harris, the executive director of UMW Museums, is back.
That is me. Yes, thank you. Glad to be back.
I always make sure I get that correct.
Yes.
It's the first time I called you a director, and you corrected me and said you'd never been an executive director, and please just once recognize it.
I'd like to think that I politely corrected you.
You did. It was very politely, yes.
Subtly.
Yes. So, welcome. Good to have you here this morning.
It's a pleasure to be here on a humid morning. It's nice to be in an air-conditioned space.
Yes, it is. And to have you here to talk about just a number of great events going on. But before we go any further, before we advance this show anymore, a Blue Star Museum. I see that here and there, and I know that the UMW museums are Blue Star museums, Belmont and Gary Melcher's Home and Studio, and the James Monroe Museum are Blue Star museums, and that's sort of a big deal.
It is, and it's something that came about as a result of really at a federal level, the Defense Department, the National Endowment for the Arts, and other organizations wanted to do something that made museums and similar cultural facilities more readily available to military families, particularly. And so, and I don't know exactly when the program began. I know that just about every museum I've been a part of has been in the program since it started, so it's been a good number of years. Begins on Armed Forces Day, as it did this year on May 17th, and it runs through Labor Day, which will be September 1st. And it provides free admission to members of the military, to their families. Now, we at our museums, we expand that definition. We include veterans in that category, as well as active duty, and that's an option. And I am not 100% positive. I'm pretty sure every one of our museums in the Fredericksburg area is a Blue Star Museum. And it is a way of saying thank you,
recognizing
service and sacrifice, and we're happy to be a part of it.
Okay. I figured it had something to do with the military, but I see that every once in a while, and I see it on Facebook. We're a Blue Star Museum.
You may remember the Blue Star traditionally is the hanging a Blue Star in some way or another indicates you have a person in the service. And so I think that is where it originated from.
I said to you just before the show got started, and I was totally serious and sincere.
New. Oh,
yeah. That's why I need to.
You feeling okay?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's the heat.
It is the heat. Yeah, and the humidity. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that response, and now I need to pull myself together. I said to you, if people around here don't take advantage of going and checking out the James Monroe Museum, they should. The James Monroe Museum, to me, is just a wonderful, wonderful museum. It has just some great things. The staff there is good. And I said, I wasn't sure if it was it's partly you. It's partly Jay Harrison. It's the staff. You can get a magnet that says JMO on it. Or you used to be able to. I love that.
Yeah, it still does. Yeah, okay. You can still get one. If yours is faded, they do tend to fade, so we can give you a new one. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
I do need to get a new one. But it is a great little museum, and little only in size. The things that are in there are pretty spectacular, and the staff is passionate. And we're going to talk about, as we go along this morning, some of the programs, really some interesting programs come out of the James Monroe Museum.
Yeah, we have been fortunate. You hit it on the head when you said that we are a small place that tells big stories, and that's been true since it was founded by his descendants. In 1928, it opened in 1928, so we're approaching the 100th anniversary of the James Monroe Museum being available to the public. So that's something that we'll be doing more of as that time approaches. But being able to talk about James Monroe's legacy at all the different levels of government, all the different major events of his lifetime he was a part of, from the Revolutionary War right to the early stirrings of what would lead to the Civil War, the Missouri Compromise, and of course the Monroe Doctrine. These are, you know, sort of the major things that we can anchor that to, but then we also can talk about the personal side, the relationship, loving relationship with his wife Elizabeth, the two children of theirs, their two daughters that lived to adulthood, and their stories, including one recently making the news. So, there's a lot to talk about at that museum.
It is. Same for Gary Melcher's. I think that was, for area museums, that was the last museum that I ended up visiting or, you know, seeing when I went with. When I moved to Fredericksburg, but I'm sorry I waited so long because that really is Belmont's just a fascinating place and just some fascinating stories.
It is, and it's very different in both scale and mission, and yet that same staff dedication, that same public service role. Corinne Melchers, the wife of Gary Melchers, who outlived him, she was younger, so she outlived him by 20-some years, died in 1955. Corinne Melchers wanted that Belmont estate there in Falmouth to be a public resource. She had opened to the public many times for children's events and for other functions. They had many guests. And so she wanted both Gary Melcher's artistic legacy and the site itself to remain in the public eye. And so we operate very much in the spirit of that. In fact, 70 years ago, this year, was when Corinne Melchers made that bequest to the Commonwealth. Hmm. And it has been 50 years since we have been open to the public as Gary Melcher's home and studio. So we mark those anniversaries. Some special exhibitions going on in the galleries of the museum, looking at Corinne Melcher's role and her art. And, you know, we've continued not only to tell that Melcher story, we are developing more about the history of the site before the Melchers. We've done dendrochronological research, tree ring boring, into the oldest timbers of the house, and firmly established 1800 as the date of construction, which that was in the middle of a range that was pretty hazy for us because there were no specific records. But the tree rings tell the story of when the trees in there that lumber was made from were felled. And with that specific knowledge, we can give the date of construction of the house a firm 1800 assignment there, and that tells us who owned the house at that time, to what degree enslaved labor might have been involved, and then the ownership under Joseph Burl Ficklin, which came along in 1823. He bought the property, and it's his descendants who sold it to the Melchers in 1916, so they had the longest tenure, the Ficklin family. There's more that we're developing about their experience there. There was many as 27 enslaved people there under the Ficklins. We know the names of a number of them through research by a great UMW intern we had, Michaela Bowman, who did a great job for us in finding some previously unknown records, talking about that. The family descendants of the Ficklins today have donated to us his portrait. Joseph Burl Ficklin's portrait is back in the house.
Oh, good.
And I would encourage people to come out and see that. So we are expanding that story, not abandoning the Melcher's role at all, but just trying to tell more of the context. But in addition to that, in addition to the art, we are a place for art after hours concerts, for programs like Preschool Palette or Picturing New Connections. And I, at whatever time it'll be appropriate here, I can highlight a few programs that are recurring that go on there that you'll want to see.
You don't have to say the name again, but you can actually. What a fascinating way to be able to find out about, you know, dating the wood in the house.
I don't have to attempt that word again.
Okay. You don't have to say that word anymore. No, you did it once. To me, it sounded
fine. I mastered
fine.
Semi-quincentennial, so yeah. I got to work on the other one too. That was we secured services of a British scientist and researcher working with an American counterpart. He's done a lot of work around here, the Mary Washington House, various other. Okay. Old places, and there's a lot of science and a lot of math that lies behind being able to tell from the borings, just like, you know, up when they do the ice borings in Antarctica or where they can tell. This tells you a record of what happened to that wood before it ended up in that joist or in that truss or wherever it was. And with a knowledge of tree species, of climatological, there's another one, variances with this historical data, they can give a very, we know that the trees that were used to build Belmont were felled in the winter of 1799 into the spring of 1800, and in those days wood was used pretty much green almost immediately for construction. And so that gives us the 1800 date of its the first portion of the house.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. They can even do that. We got a lot to talk about. We've got to talk about Eliza. We've got to talk about a lot of things this morning, and we'll do that with Scott Ayers, Executive Director, UMW Museums. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning with UMW Museums, Executive Director of UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum, and Gary Melchers. And as we said, just great places to stop by and check out things and make it part of your... We've got great museums all around here. So as part of your museum stops all around here. So looking at a couple of things coming up with the James Monroe Museum, looks like Sketchy History,
yes,
is returning, and that's been around now for a number of years. Something that you started years ago.
Yeah, when we started to really try to more, I was going to say aggressively, but that's not a good word. More assertively develop public programs. We wanted to look at things that would be engaging for families, that would have a little, you know, twist to them. And I am proud to claim to be the author of the term Sketchy History for what is our version of Pictionary, or
yeah,
Win, Lose, or Draw, both copyrighted terms. And it's a great family fun thing. Any combination of people can do it, but we have found families like to come and, you know, and it's the simplest concept, draw something and guess what it is.
Yeah.
But it can be quite interesting how people interpret things and how much mental relationship between people. You know, you draw a single line, Statue of Liberty, yes, yay, okay. It can be fun to watch the interactions of people, too. And then history trivia coming up,
yes,
after that.
Yes, so Sketchy History is on Thursday the 26th.
That's correct, yes. And at 6 p.m., these are all programs that are free admission. They are opportunity to have a fun activity. We have free snacks, a cash bar. So done in our garden at the James Monroe Museum.
A great spot to do it. History trivia then will be on July 3rd.
Yes, we have a couple. On July 3rd, the celebrity quiz master will be none other than President James Monroe himself, looking remarkably fit for someone who passed away in 1831.
He always does.
Yes, he does. It's incredible.
Always does. But history trivia is fun in that up until when I first went to history trivia, I always said, I'm pretty good at history. I never say that anymore.
Oh, it you're still good at history.
It was humbling. Every time I've been to history trivia, it has been a humbling experience.
Well, you know, it's funny, and you have twice graced us with that role, and we appreciate that. I think it's twice, right?
Yeah.
Twice,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. We can work all day long, you know, all week long on questions and come up with the ones we think these are truly, truly hard. People are going to have a problem with this one. They get it instantly. Others that seem like the easiest thing in the world,
yeah,
people complain and throw things at me and everything. It's like, okay, you can never predict. But we have a good time with it. We always love having our celebrity quizmaster. As a sign of how things are going downhill, I will be the celebrity quizmaster on September 5th when we do history trivia. So we'll have two opportunities for that this year. One with President Monroe by our stalwart, wonderful Jay Harrison.
Yes.
Who has portrayed him for 40 years almost.
Something like that, yeah.
And then myself.
So in both of those, and I guess like you said, when you used the word aggressively, for both Sketchy History and History Trivia, are just ways to really introduce people to the museum if they haven't, and if they have been, it's just a great time. It's a great opportunity to have fun. And both of those games are just they fit what Fredericksburg's all about.
They do, excuse me. And also, you're right. It is about awareness. It's about getting people there. maybe for the first time.
Yeah.
It's about building a familiarity with the place and realizing that even if you've seen the exhibits, even if there hasn't been a lot of change, and we don't have very, very frequent turnover of the exhibits just for space reasons and other reasons, still, you give people a reason for coming back, something that they haven't done before. And the public programming part of that is what gives us the flexibility to do different new things, push the envelope sometimes of some of the topics, or try to look at different things that might engage people. Heather Meadows on our staff, who is our store manager and office manager and membership manager, she has three jobs, she had developed a program that we did sort of as an experiment a couple of years ago called Tea and Trifles. I think she had offered a couple of different places. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, the thing is sold out every time because it's doing historic recipes with modern ingredients, adjusting for modern things, and paired with certain teas, and each one is themed. And we have had such response to that. And so you just never know what will click with people.
Yeah.
We did a paper marbling class earlier this spring. We did one on nature journaling. We have a perfume class. We have a cursive writing workshop coming up because people aren't taught cursive anymore.
I know. They can't read it a lot of times.
It becomes hieroglyphics.
And yes.
If you can't read our founding documents, for instance, or the correspondence of people before the advent of typeset and everything, you're in trouble because you won't know that history. My wife, in fact, whom you know, in her retirement, is working as a volunteer for the National Archives, transcribing documents that are in original cursive because she can read them. She can understand
yeah.
them. So we thought, let's do our part to try help teaching that. And so we're trying a class in that. All these, by the way, if you go to jamesmonroemuseum.umw.edu, our website there, you can access the calendar, you can access information, also social media, you know, Facebook and the other usual platforms will give you information on these and many other programs. We're really fortunate that we've got a great team and have put together a really nice run all the way through December of this year.
Yeah, there are all kinds of things. I do want to talk about that in September. You've got and maybe even before September, we'll do a longer feature on Eliza, and we're going to talk about her in a little bit this morning. But
sure.
Just dealing with a lot of different things, and it's worth following on Facebook or whatever methods you need to do to follow some of these programs because they're outside. They're outside of the general history kind of thing. If you're one of these people that will say that history bores you, none of these programs will. And just like you say, the cooking one is just a great example of being able to go back in time and, mm-hmm. and see some of the things, you know, the way it was.
And again, all these programs are free with just a few exceptions. There are a few that for reasons of both the nature of the program, what it takes to put it on, there are a few that are fee events. An example is Tavern Night that we'll do in October. That's, you know, basically a round of different 19th century cocktails. Well, that's more of an adult program, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We do charge for that one. We charge for our Deck the Halls workshop with Jan Williams. Once again, you know, coming back to do that
sells
fabulous
out every year.
Holiday decorating workshop, right. So a few of them are fee-based, but the majority are not. So you have opportunities to do a lot of different things.
Forgot to send you a reminder this week, but this week marked another anniversary of one of my fondest memories of any event I have ever been to on a Flag Day a few years ago, the national anthem with a kazoo.
Many kazoos, yes.
Many kazoos. It was a great event. It's never been repeated for some reason.
Well, that was part of a nationwide campaign called Raise It Up, and it was commemorate the bicentennial of the Star-Spangled Banner. And so people all over the country were encouraged at the same time to perform, sing, play, do whatever. And we determined that we would likely be the only kazoo band in America And I stand by that. I don't think anyone's ever told me another one was. To do the Star Spangled Banner on the street in front of the James Monroe Museum. And we had, I don't know, 40, 50 people. I forget the number.
Yeah.
And it was great. Everyone, because if you can breathe and you can hum, you can play a kazoo. It doesn't take a lot of instruction. So it was great.
Yeah,
it was just great. That and many other great videos are on the James Monroe Museum's YouTube channel. So you can go back and investigate that wonderful moment in history.
Relive that moment. I am guessing, I haven't talked to you about this, but I am guessing that the James Monroe Museum will be involved in some way with the Virginia 250.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh yes, very much. We are part of the city's committee that's overseeing that. We are participating in some of the joint activities that will go on, but most of us in the Fredericksburg museums are doing our own thing. We're just trying to coordinate it, trying to make sure we don't program against each other.
Yeah.
So much of what we do on a regular basis at the museum, talking about Monroe's career, you know, he did join the Revolutionary Movement as a student at William & Mary. He joined the Continental Army. He was wounded in the service of his country at the Battle of Trenton and carried that musket ball for the rest of his life. So he was our first wounded warrior president. Well, that's our stock and trade every day, and it's very easy to just pivot and advertise that as part of the commemoration. There are other aspects of that we will be doing in that principally in 2026, next year, because that'll be the main focus of it.
Yeah.
But we'll just continue to do what we do all the time. That part of our overall story of Monroe is very important, the revolutionary legacy.
So we'll be looking for that, because you'll see a lot of Virginia 250 all around Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And in many of these places, but especially around here, the James Monroe Museum for sure. Scott Harris here, the executive director of UMW Museums, jamesmonroemuseum.umw.edu. If you want to get more information on some of these programs that we have talked about, we'll talk about the Eliza Monroe story when we come back. More coming up with Scott Harris this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's almost 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
It is a Scott Harrison this morning from UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum, and Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont in Stafford. We'll get into that and get into some of their programs and some of the things that you can see there, too, as we go along this morning. The Bringing Eliza Home movement has been very interesting to me, and I think I was kind of late learning the story, but Eliza's home. Well, she's back in Virginia.
That's correct. Eliza Monroe Hay was the eldest child of James and Elizabeth Monroe. They'd had a son who died in infancy, and then she had a younger sister, Mariah. But Eliza was born here in the Fredericksburg area, not right in Fredericksburg, but in 1786, just about the time the Monroes were starting to make their home in this area. And then Monroe was posted to a diplomatic assignment in France later, and so the family goes with him. And Eliza develops a real love of being in France. One of her schoolmates was Napoleon's daughter, and so that's kind of the circles that they're moving in. Yeah, Hortense de Bernays, who would later become Queen of Holland. So there was a real bond with that country. And years later, after her father's career had ended, after they had been in the White House and lots of other events had unfolded, Eliza, who was the widow of George Hay, her father's private secretary, found herself in Paris. She had come back there really to visit. Doesn't appear that she intended to stay, but she fell ill and died. Daniel Brent, the charge d'affaires there, who was also of local family origin here in Stafford County, Brent arranged for her burial in Père Lachaise Cemetery, where he had plots for other expatriate Americans who had died while being in France. And there she lay until well into this century, when Catherine Willis of our community, on behalf of the James Monroe Museum, made a concerted effort to help locate Eliza's forgotten grave, to help clean it up and mark it with a lovely ceramic flower topper. And that's sort of the level of what we had helped do. The James Brown Museum helped pay for that effort. And then a woman named Barbara Vorndick in Albemarle County, who was affiliated as a volunteer with James Monroe's Highland, became very, very interested, I'll just say it, obsessed with the idea of not just remembering that Eliza was there, but bringing her home, bringing her remains back to be buried in the Monroe tomb in Richmond's Hollywood Cemetery. I think that most people, including myself, gave them very little chance of being able to carry that out. I mean, it was literally an international situation that had to be managed. But Barbara, who met through our introduction, Catherine, became sort of soulmates on that project. Sue Henderson, whom we well know, mm-hmm. involved in many local activities, got involved. And they pulled it off. They and other interested parties, and with a little very sort of hands-off help from our museum, only in helping like arrange meetings with family members, things like that. They really lobbied on both sides of the Atlantic and got this done. Her remains, Eliza Monroe Hayes' remains, came back earlier this year. There was a brief program up in Loudoun County earlier this month, and in October of this year, around the time of not her birthday, but a bit before her birthday, there'll be a program that is conducted here in Fredericksburg, sort of a memorial for her, and then she'll be interred next spring at Hollywood Cemetery. So quite a, really just a striking story of being able to envision this idea to do it and to carry it out and reunite that family, because all the other Monroe immediate family members are buried together there in Hollywood, so this will bring them all back together.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great story. When Catherine was in this spring, and we talked about it, and I kind of had to say, and at that time, they still were negotiating.
Right.
And I kind of had the same thought that you did of, this seems like a great idea, but it's also kind of seems like a long shot, too, because mm-hmm. it just didn't seem like the pieces were moving in the right direction to do it, but it happened, and it's a very unique story.
And they listed help from members of the Virginia General Assembly, from the congressional delegation, certainly within the State Department, and then officials on the French side had to be worked with. So it was very involved, but it did get done. And actually this September, on the 18th, mm-hmm. At Central Rappahannock Regional Library, the James Monroe Museum is sponsoring a program, a book talk called Eliza's True Story. Barbara Vorndick, the woman I mentioned who really helped kick this off, wrote a book about Eliza, and she'll be talking about that at the library on Thursday, September 18th, 6 p.m. That's one of the items in the museum's calendar that you can reference or you'll see on social media.
Yeah, so it's a great story. The pictures from Loudoun County were so interesting. They did a very respectful and just a nice little program, and the whole thing. I had always, it was thanks to you, I finally made a visit to Hollywood Cemetery. I was so excited mm-hmm. to be there. When I got there, I sent you pictures that I was, mm-hmm. I was there, yes. And I was, but the fact that James, you know, the Monroe family's there and she can be there is a. It's a great fitting into this story.
And the tomb, that great Gothic revival, what was once called the Birdcage, but after its restoration, it looks more like a cathedral in my mind, mm-hmm. Is one of the notable architectural features in Richmond, really, and of cemetery architecture. It's just it is itself a thing to see, just the admire the beauty of it, but then to know that that's the presidential resting place and the rest of the family.
It is the, and it's not hard to find, because I got there, and because it's so elaborate, mm-hmm. and you know, just the ornaments and in everything. So check it out if you're.
It anchors the president's circle. There are several other former presidents buried there.
They are, yeah,
including one that's not a. He's an American president, but not a United States president. Jefferson Davis is around there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the Eliza story, I'm sure you'll hear more about that and continue to hear more about that in the months ahead. But again, on the on September 18th, there is that talk at the James Monroe Museum. Scott Harris here this morning, shifting gears a little bit to Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont. Art After Hours is something that's been done down now for a number of years. I remember that from the get go when that was first a few years ago started, and I remember the first one. Everyone was kind of, I wonder how people will take to this, and people take to it. That it's a great area. That's a great spot to be able to do things in.
Yes, it's on the lawn before the house, before the home Belmont. It's anchored by, you know, the river and the woods in the background, and lovely manicured grounds around it. The galleries, art galleries, are open there on site during the evening of the concert. We have food trucks. We have craft beer and wine that's offered through Sodexo, the university's food service company. We have Tilly's Ice Cream. They come out and they are one of several recurring vendors. And we have different styles of music. We were going to have Mach Pradiri, the Celtic band, to start us off in May, and it rained on both the original date and the rain date. So we're going to try and get them back later.
Oh, okay.
But the Fredericksburg Concert Band earlier this month kicked it off, you know, for real, and they had like 70 musicians. Every time they come, they have like 10 or 20 more people. I said, we need a bigger museum and grounds to hold your band. But just a wonderful concert. The rain held off. And we had, you know, over 250 people there. We have parking for about 100 cars, and then we have satellite parking down at the parks in Falmouth, and we run a shuttle back and forth. So we have plenty of capacity. And it's just a great evening to hear the music. We have two more concerts coming up in July and in August, and you're going to want to... look for information about those in the on the calendar at GaryMelchers.org. That's okay. The website for the museum, and it will give you the remaining schedule, which, if I remember how to use my phone someday and pull up the right
I thought I saw it on thing. Facebook too.
It's on Facebook too as well, and I'm here we go, Art After Hours. So yeah, our other the next one coming up on July 17th is Hazel Run Band, and that is going to be, the Surf Riders band is coming up on the 17th, and on August 7th is Hazel Run. So,
okay.
But in each case, all those things I mentioned, the food trucks, the beer and wine, the galleries being open. But that's a recurring, really popular program, sponsored in part by Stafford County Tourism. We're very grateful for that. But we've, again, just like with James Monroe, we've been looking at trying to find these kinds of programs that would appeal to, you know, wider sorts of interest groups, if you will. And we do monthly woodland hikes led by Virginia Master Naturalists. That's on the last Sunday of each month, and you can sign up for those. And it's really actually, you don't have to sign up. You can just show up, really. But just wear good footwear and spend some time amongst our 2 miles of walking trails.
Trails at Belmont are terrific, by the way.
Yeah, we are fortunate that the Master Naturalists help us not only maintain those and keep them clean, but we have Boy Scout projects to help build footbridges and things like that. So it's a community effort to keep that going. If you're a motorhead, if you're a car enthusiast, not necessarily interested in art or history, you can still come over to Gary Melcher's the second Saturday of each month from April to October from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. for Cars and Coffee, where people can come and bring their classic car, or any car, really. The one you just bought from CarMax, I don't know. But you can come and yeah. Show it off, and people with similar interests can talk and swap and just have a good time. And we have a coffee vendor there, and it's an opportunity to get to know Gary Melcher's home and studio a little bit, maybe decide to go ahead and visit or you know, shop in the store or whatever. But this is a before hours. We have art after hours. We have cars and coffee before hours that gives you a chance to do something different. If you're an artist, you like to go out and to the plain air, as they call it, the open air to paint, we have plain air painting days that go on at Belmont, and you can come and enjoy that opportunity. Just a host of different things that we do to help fulfill Corinne Melcher's view of making this a community resource, a place to really appreciate her vision. So on various days, we will open up for that for the plein air painters. Our next one coming up, well, it was today. It is today. It's June 19th.
Get your art,
hurry,
get your art things
get out right
together.
Now. And you can find more about that on our calendar at GaryMelchers.org.
And you do you've done a great job over the years of of having the bringing the community. And I always think in the spring the greatest example, one of the great examples, is the beeping eggs that you bring in.
Beeping egg hunt. Yep, that is one for youngsters principally who have visual impairments. The eggs make noise, help you key in on them. And that is in the tradition, again, of what Corinne Melchers did in opening her home for Easter egg rolls and Easter egg hunts. And we just are able to give it a particular extra level with being able to take part in that. So, yeah, we're very happy to have been able to do that. And I misspoke, by the way, about the plein air. It's actually on the second Saturday of the month from April to October, so it's not today.
Okay.
But just look at the calendar for those second Saturdays from now until October.
Don't go there today.
I mean, if you
want
to go there today, just hang out. It's great. You know, we're open. You know.
But. Do that, but okay. That does that. You know, there's always something. You're always finding something with Gary Melchers, because it was a few years ago. I remember I was on vacation and was just fascinated by you. Somebody on your staff found something like with the Detroit News, with this old video of Gary Melchers in Detroit.
The silent newsreel film.
Yeah. The other so I'm looking, knowing you were going to come in and just checking out some of the Belmont things. The Missouri State Capitol murals is a fascinating story of just and there are some pictures of him. So I'm guessing it is that's what he was commissioned to do some paintings.
Several artists did those, and Melchers did one related to Mark Twain.
Yeah,
showing him as in his older life. Doesn't show him as a young man, but it shows him posing at a riverboat. And we have a small study of that larger mural in our collection. And so that, Missouri State Capitol, interestingly, has ties to both of our museums, because there is not only those Melchers murals, but there is a statue commemorating the Louisiana Purchase in the same vicinity there in the Capitol, and it shows James Monroe along with Robert Livingston and the French treasurer. It's we have a study in plaster of that same scene that is in the James Monroe Museum, but the full size is there in the Missouri Capitol. So our museums have ties in both places there.
I just thought there was it's interesting where a lot of these things, like you say, they either tie together or you find things just in the course of research. There's just when you think we know all that there is, and there's always. See, you frequently see stories of where, another Melchers painting will pop up somewhere that someone has had it, in their private collection and has come forward with.
There's a couple that we know of right now that are out there that could enter the market, and we do hear of these things. I can tell you, if you want to go to Holland, anytime between now and the end of the late November, there's an exhibition in Ekman, Holland, that is near where Gary Melchers had an artist sort of colony there for years, and they borrowed 15 paintings from our museum, from Gary Melchers' home and studio, which just set out last week on their journey to Holland for that loan. So we is one of the biggest groups we have sent out for loan in quite a while.
We're gonna take a quick break in now and wrap this up this morning. One of the things I want to talk about is we've touched on it a little bit, but just if you're ever looking for gift ideas, bookstores at both the James Monroe Museum and Gary Melchers are terrific places to get gifts. I have done it. or you don't even have to get gifts. You can go in and buy things for yourself. We'll talk about that and a few other things with Scott Harris, Executive Director, UMW Museums this morning. More coming up. We'll conclude on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning, the executive director of UMW Museums, James Moreau Museum, and Gary Melcher's home and studio in Stafford. As we've talked about, lots going on. As I just mentioned, great bookstores at both places. If you're looking for local stuff or stuff related to the museums, both great museums, I still have my James Moreau bobblehead proudly on my
as
desk
well
at
you
home.
Should. Yes.
which another great between I think I got the JMO magnet and the bobblehead on the same day, and it remains two of my prized possessions and two great things to walk out of a museum bookshop with. But really, there really are great things you can get.
Yes, and we strive to have products in both stores that are interesting, that are maybe a little educational, hopefully a lot of fun. Tied to our mission, for the most part, trying to be faithful to that. But also, they're an important source of revenue for both museums. We get state appropriations for the James Moreau Museum, for Gary Melcher's Home and Studio, that cover about 80% of our operating costs. And so the remainder we have to earn ourselves, whether it be through store sales, admissions, rental of our facilities. Both are available for that. You can find out information about that on the websites, or through donations. Mm-hmm. And that can take the form of joining Friends of Belmont or the Friends of the James Monroe Museum, giving on something like Mary Wash Day, which has become a very popular annual fundraiser that the university does. Which, by the way, I'll just say my alma mater and my employer, University of Mary Washington, has really embraced that single giving day concept with its alumni. And other schools do too, your William and Mary's and your UVA's and other. But I think UMW punches above its weight in terms of what we accomplish on Mary Wash Day, and topped over $1 million this year.
Yeah, this was a great one.
And just really actively engaged throughout the organization, throughout the school with that. And so I'm very proud of our advancement team and the folks that are involved in that, and our alumni, my fellow alumni, and how we step up on that day, including for our museums and for the Great Lives Lecture Series, which I also do, and which we're just about forgetting to say anything about. But I would encourage people to stay tuned this fall to hear about what the 2026 season of Great Lives will be, as we look forward to bringing that public lecture series back to the school.
You excited how that's coming together?
Yes. We have been busily talking to authors and looking at calendar dates and contract terms and honoraria and all that, and we're very close to having that set up. We need to, because we need the summer to get posters and marketing materials together and get all the travel logistics and all that done. And we're still trying to lock in a date for this fall, November, maybe as late as December, to have the reveal reception for that. So stay tuned. Maybe we can come back and do a Great Lives preview.
We will. We did that. We did that last year, or the end of last year, early this year, when we did that. It's always good to talk about that because, boy, that's a huge program, and a lot of big name authors and a lot of information comes in. So yeah, I had that written on my paper and had just glossed over it that you and the in the Great Lives series again. Remember, history trivia is coming up on the 3rd. At the James Moreau Museum, Sketchy History on the 26th, and just all kinds of...
June 26th for Sketchy History, July 3rd, History Trivia. And if you want to learn about how to create interesting personal scents,
perfume class
on July 19th with Sugar and Spruce, joining at the James Moreau Museum to help teach about that.
JamesMoreauMuseum.umw.edu for information there. Check out Facebook for all the stuff with Gary Melchers. Scott Harris, thanks.
Thank you.
Talk soon.
See you soon.
That's it. Thanks for listening. See you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.